With your help, we can continue to fight for freedom. This is not possible without your generosity. Join our quest for the truth and our freedom and donate today. Simply go to tntradio.live. A cross between ZZ Top and Sherlock Holmes. You're with Hesher on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Well, hello, and thank you for joining me here for the Brian McClain Show on today's News Talk. TNTradio.live is the website. Find any scheduling and calendar updates over there at the website, all that good stuff. Shout out to everybody in the TNTradio.live interactive chat room. Thank you for joining me today. Now, in the previous hour, I had a great conversation with my co-host Steve Hook and our guests. My goodness, really, really interesting conversation. And, you know, while we were having that conversation, I came across this one. I just want to throw this out there again, because we talk about the invasion, right? The engineered invasion of the United States, as Ted Nugent calls it, who joined us on Friday. What a fantastic conversation that was. That was an absolute... Ted came into the room, lit his hair on fire, and came into the room in a Hellcat. He was shooting his bow while we were talking to him. It was great fun. But I want to talk about this Flight TK-800 because it's not just the Constantine wire being cut at the border. You know, we talk about that one a lot. We talk about, oh, the border, we're very hard on our border patrol. But you see, there is an issue of compartmentalization here that needs to be considered. And this is a direct result of the Patriot Act and the ongoing NDAA, that monstrosity that we sign annually, all right? This is very, very bad, right? But when you give the federal government control over ICE, you give them control over CBP, this is what happens, right? States... We talked about states' rights with our guest in the last hour. States' rights are no longer there. So the government has effectively taken our rights away with the Patriot Act. And now states' rights are suffering. We're seeing that right now. For example, if a citizen group like Dustin Stockton and Jennifer Lawrence and their cohorts and colleagues with We Build the Wall are to actually build a wall, well, they will be victimized by the government, the federal government, and that wall will not be respected. Or if you're a Border Patrol agent, you know, everybody down on the Border Patrol agents. Well, if the Border Patrol was a state organization instead of a federal organization, or at least a state-run organization, we would have our own, we as citizens, me here in Texas and you out there in New Mexico or Arizona or California, Arizona, Tucson sector. What a mess. What an absolute mess. But our Border Patrol agents could actually uphold the laws. But instead, they work under federal rules of engagement. So I know it's horrible to see Border Patrol agents cutting through the wire and allowing people through, but you have to remember that's their rule of engagement. That's the federal government. That's the Department of Homeland Security telling them these are your rules of engagement. These people are already, the border's not where the freaking barbed wire is, okay? The border is further south than that. These people are already in the country illegally. It's very unfortunate. I know it would be so easy to say, you Border Patrol people, how do you wake up in the morning? But that's like saying that to the United States Marine Corps guy who's guarding the heroin poppy fields, the opium poppy fields in Afghanistan or something. They have orders. They have rules of engagement. And guess what the rule is? Do not engage. Process. This person is here illegally, probably a misdemeanor, maybe looking for asylum. Process it. Okay, so we see all the problems there, but like our guest brought up in the last hour, they're coming in our airports. This flight TK-800 from Istanbul to Bogota is sold out every day. There's even a picture up here at Gateway Pundit of someone's electronic visa. You can see exactly where people are coming from. There's photos of it. You can see a photo of the entire plane packed. These illegal immigrants are paying as much as $12,000 for this journey. I got to wonder, are they getting, is that subsidized with your and my tax dollars? I would not be surprised. In fact, I'd be surprised if it wasn't being subsidized with our tax dollars. So keep an eye on this one. Keep an eye on this. You know, they're trying to hide what's going on. They don't want you to know. They don't want you to know that we're literally just bringing in as many people as we possibly can. For all the latest community events, rallies, marches, festivals, and fundraisers happening near you, then visit the What's on Events calendar on the TNT Radio website, tntradio.live, and stay in touch with TNT Radio.
Stream us anywhere.
I listen on Alexa.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Now, joining me is Martin Seif. He's a senior fellow of the American University in Moscow and former senior foreign correspondent for the Washington Times and former managing editor, International Affairs, United Press International. He has a master's in modern history from Oxford, specializing in U.S. modern history. Martin, it's wonderful to be with you here.
It's always a pleasure to be on with you, Brian. Thank you so much. And again, just even listening to your introduction here too, I can never be on your show without learning more. Thank you.
Well, I aim to inform not only myself, but you and you listening as well. So, Martin, let's continue in that theme here. First of all, if you have any comments about that, I'd love to hear them. But I want to talk to you. The big question here is the Ukraine really bleeding Russia to death? I definitely want to get to your latest piece.
The answer is, and you've read the piece, so you know my answer at least on that. And the answer is no. Poor Ukraine is bleeding to death. The Russians are killing them, but we are propelling them into it. And what we have done is, I have no idea. It isn't even a question of how these people, or how our generals and our national security advisors sleeps at night. They're either idiots or psychopaths, so they sleep very well. Either way, they have no conscience. Of course they sleep well. But how can they be so stupid as to imagine that this works? Because the tactics that they are applying here are the same tactics that the British Army used 200 years ago against General Andy Jackson in the Battle of New Orleans. Sending their troops marching forward steadily against prepared lines of defense armed with the most advanced firepower of the day. At the Battle of New Orleans, we killed thousands of British soldiers who were supposed to be the best soldiers in the world at the time. Their commanders, some of whom who died in New Orleans, had been involved in the Battle of Waterloo only a few months before. They'd beaten Napoleon. And Andy Jackson beat them. And their tactics were ridiculous. And these are the same tactics that our generals are advising, quote unquote, the armed forces of Ukraine, AFU, to send their army forward. They lost two armies already. They have now lost a third. Official figures from the best U.S. Honest analysts put Ukraine's death toll at 200,000. People who watch it even more closely, like Scott Ritter, who used to work for the U.N., and the greatest U.S. military armor commander of modern times, General Douglas MacGregor, they put Ukrainian dead at 400,000 plus. When you factor in other causes of death, as well as those dying from injured afterwards, my own figure that I regularly use is 500,000 dead boys, almost as many as the U.S. Civil War, and in only a year and a half of fighting, most of it this year.
Horrible. Yeah, that is horrible. Now, Martin, I heard yesterday my colleague Patrick Henningsen speaking with one of his guests, and they were talking about how in Ukraine now they're going to have the women between 18 and 60 signing up for some sort of selective service. Have you heard anything about this?
A little, not much, but basically enough to confirm that they are going to be doing it. But I'll tell you this. They will, of course, say it's a national effort. The ladies will be happy to do it. They won't be happy to do it. They're going to be signed up as cannon fodder as well. They won't technically put them on the front lines, but why are they signing them up? Because they have run out of men. Again, they are bleeding dry. The army that embarrassed, didn't seriously injure the Russians, but embarrassed the Russians, because the Russians were not expecting any significant opposition at all. And the Russians were, above all else, looking to minimize casualties on their own side. And by the standards of modern war, they were relatively restrained, which, of course, our biased media gave them no credit for. So the Russians stopped very quickly in the first stages of the war. And that was why when Zelensky first came to Washington in December of last year, just before Christmas, 2022, Zelensky was acclaimed as Napoleon. He was acclaimed as Patton and MacArthur, as this great genius general who had destroyed the Russian army. That was a lie. But here's the important point. Our own senators, congressmen, and of course, everybody at the very top of the Biden administration believed their own lie. And that is why they have pushed line after line of hundreds of thousands, literally hundreds of thousands of poor Ukrainian boys into the line to be slaughtered. Because like the horrible, evil British psychopath general of World War I, Douglas Haig, they always believe the next push will break them. They're on the edge of breaking. There's a war of attrition going on, and we're on the edge of breaking them. Well, they're right in one thing. There is a war of attrition going on. But the people who are being bled dry are not the Russians. They are the poor Ukrainians. And it should stop immediately. But I'll tell you this. Even if their diabolical policy of bleeding Russia dry succeeded, we should not be happy. Because if the Russians thought it was succeeding, they'd press the nuclear button immediately and try and annihilate us. And hundreds of millions of people would be dead. And you and I and every one of the TNT radio hosts and most of the people listening to you, even in small communities of 50,000 to 80,000 or less, will have thermonuclear weapons targeted on them because there are enough, believe me, to go around. And their thermonuclear weapons work. Our old Minutemen are 60 years old, and there is repeated official congressional testimony. Because we let our industrial base collapse and all the industry and manufacturing go to China, we cannot even replace spare parts of systems that were built 60 years ago. The US Air Force is full of wonderful, brilliant, technical, first-class people. And you know what they have to do? They use chewing gum and copper wire and sellotape to keep the connections in place so that when they flip a switch, they hope the Minuteman ICBM will launch. We need chewing gum and prayers and sellotape to make intercontinental ballistic missiles launch. That's what we're reduced to.
And never mind the supersonic technology they have also. It doesn't even have to go thermonuclear for things to get very, very
exactly. Effective. Exactly.
Wow, that's scary. And Martin, let me ask you this. Is there, you know, I follow a lot of music on my social media feeds. It's sort of my thing, yeah. Aside from news. When I've had enough of news, I like to look through the music feeds. And I follow a number of bands out of Ukraine, actually, two or three of them. And you know, other people also, because I'm interested. But I don't see, like, when you see footage of inside of Kiev, if you prefer, it looks like life as normal. I'm seeing young people doing selfies. You know, it doesn't look like it did when Joe Biden went there and they shut the street down and blared the air siren. It just seems like people are just living normally inside of there. I'm not seeing any anti-war protests either. What is, and same with Russia. I'm curious, is there any anti-war movement in either country that we should be discussing?
The answer is, you've just asked one of the most important questions imaginable. And the answers are different, but equally revealing for both Ukraine and Russia. There is an enormous anti-war movement in Ukraine. It involves millions of people. And therefore, they have left Ukraine. That is why Ukraine and Europe and Britain and Canada are flooded with Ukrainian refugees. And the Zelensky government just did something unbelievably outrageous. They asked the Ukrainian, the European Union, right? The union of 20, I think it's currently 28 or 27, Britain left, but I think it's up to 28 again now, but the union of virtually all European nations to forcibly deport back to Ukraine all young Ukrainian men who have settled there as refugees in the last 2 or 3 years. Now, if it was the Biden administration, I believe they would do it. If it was the ghastly Justin Trudeau government in Canada, I believe they would certainly do it. But the European mainland governments in Germany, France, Spain, Italy, Poland too, to their great credit, the smaller nations, they refused to do it. They refused to do it. They stuck by the fundamental rules of human rights and human decency. Whatever they are suffering themselves from the horrors of the European Commission in Brussels, in certain key areas, bless them, the governments of Europe are sticking firm to human rights. Right? They are refusing to do this. Now, at the end of World War II, Britain and America, especially Britain, more the British than the Americans, sent hundreds of thousands of Ukrainians and Cossacks and other refugees from Stalin, and they back nearly a million people, men, women, and children. Thousands of them committed suicide when they were forced onto the railroad cars, just as Jewish people had been forced onto railroad cars to Auschwitz, and British bayonets pushed Ukrainian terrified innocent civilians onto railroad cards back to be tortured and slaughtered by Joseph Stalin. And now the current Ukrainian government fighting for democracy is trying to do it again. So there is a huge anti-war movement in Ukraine. And that is another reason that they're trying to pull all the young women of Ukraine into their meat grinder too. Now, technically, they'll use them for support staff at first. But why do they need them for support staff? Because they haven't got enough young men to go around, because a million people have rightly fled the country, knowing that 500,000 are dead and another million seriously injured because the Ukrainian generals are listening to American and NATO generals who do not give a damn about them and just have the vague hope that they're bleeding Russia dry. But the second half of your question, Brian. Well,
Martin, hold that. That's great. That's a great, great summary of what's going on in Ukraine. We'll get your take on what the Russian civilization and society response is after a break here with today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
You should hear what George Eliason is talking about.
The importance of August 24th, the day that Donald Trump was booked and that famous or infamous booking picture came out. August 24th is also Ukraine's Independence Day.
Yes.
And since nothing in the political world happens by chance, it seems that they made this happen as a gift to Ukraine and Zelensky.
This date marks probably the most blatant example of shameless weaponization of the Department of Justice against a political player like Donald Trump, who has been targeted since 2016, even before, first place to prevent him to run for office and then to delegitimize his presidency all the way, while Joe Biden, already under Obama presidency as a vice president, was doing business in Ukraine, as I had the opportunity to explain during my work in Kyiv for the documentary you mentioned, The Everlasting President.
War of the Worlds with George Eliason on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
We've come so far as a nation. We are the envy of the world, and our future is limited only by our belief in each other.
Now we have a choice to make. Do we give in to guilt and division, or do we say no?
No to those who want to divide us.
I've decided to vote no because the voice will divide us.
No to those people who think all Indigenous Australians think the same.
We are not all the same, and there's a lot of us Aboriginal people that are voting no.
No to those who want to change the rule book of the country.
Why let them divide us? Because we are all Australians.
We are one mob.
Come on, Australia, let's stay united.
Vote no to the voice of division.
Authorised by Matthew Sheehan, Advance Australia, Canberra.
Without CO2, the world stops breathing. CO2 sustains all life on Earth. Government, the WEF, and the elite believe humans are the carbon they really want to be rid of. Today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Martin Seif is my guest here on the Brian McLean Show at Today's News Talk. newcontinent.org, that's continent with a K, is the website where you can keep up with Martin's writing. Now, before the headline there, Martin, you broke down what is going on. It's amazing to think that there are that many Ukrainians that are anti-war, that are so, you know, have fled the country because they know what is coming and what is happening. And we never hear about that. You just basically never hear about that in the Western mass media. The other thing they don't tell us about, or maybe they do tell us, but they tell us the wrong things, are what people in Russia are saying. What are there demonstrations against the war in Russia or anything like this, Martin?
There are no major significant demonstrations in Russia. Now, in Russia, as in Ukraine, neither of them are democracies, even in our most idealized Western, theoretical Western sense. So it would be it takes a lot of moral courage and a lot of organization, which governments in both countries try to make impossible, for there to be popular demonstrations. But these things happen. You know, Brian, my most recent article, I had a friend who was a journalist who went into, of all things, the intelligence community because somebody who admired his business writing and made him even richer was the late Bill Casey, who was director of Central Intelligence. And he took my friend, Herb Mayer, when he was still in his 30s, and made him the top intelligence analyst in America. And Herb didn't stay there for long. As long as Casey was there, he protected Herb. But Herb was not part of the deep state. And he challenged their consensus. And he was always proven right. So they hated him. So when Bill Casey was dying, even before President Reagan left office, Herb saw the writing on the wall, took his wife and young children, and went as far from Washington. He was a proud American patriot, but he went as far from Washington as you could get to live on an island off Seattle and went into different career as a business lecturer and advisor. And it was hard at first for him, but in a completely new field. But of course, being the kind of guy he was, he made a great go of it. But here's the point. When he was in Washington, and he was still only in his early 30s, mid-30s, he produced a series of memorandums saying that the Soviet Union was going to collapse within 10 years because not only were their statistics lying to us in the West, but they were lying to themselves. They were meaningless. Their economy was collapsing, and they didn't know it was collapsing because they believed their own statistics. And of course, he proved to be completely right. And I asked him years later when we became friends, looking back on that, how come you were right and they were all wrong? And he said, well, Marty, they believed that they didn't go out and look for themselves. They just believed the figures that were handed to them. They had this kind of, you know, medieval religious faith, not in God, but in figures, right? And I just looked at what was happening in Russia. And he said, when I was a business writer for Fortune magazine, I would interview millionaires and billionaires, highly successful men who'd set up major, hugely successful startup companies. And they lived like it. Many of them lived very modestly and quietly, but they could have and knew they could have the best of everything. There was a quiet comfort and confidence to them. But then Herb went on, if you drove out into the middle of nowhere, into a place with no running water, and no working lavatories, and this guy told you he was going to corner the market into lithium crystals or in lithium or in Tesla cars or any under the sun, and he was living worse than a tramp, you knew there was something wrong somewhere. You know he was out of his tree, right? And he said this was the point with the Russian statistics, the Soviet statistics. They talked a great talk. It looked as if they were catching up with us. But everybody in the Soviet Union lived like tramps, including even their own elites by Western standards. They lived like jerks. I mean, I visited the homes of some of these people. Herb was absolutely right. They didn't have hot water every day, maybe for 5 or 10 minutes if they were lucky. Often their gas was off. They had nonstop electrical cuts. Well, it sounds like California today under progressive governments, but there you are. Exactly, right? Mm-hmm. So you knew it was a lie. Now, if you look at Russia today, do you see the signs of a collapsing society? No, you do not. Do you see a country being bled dry? No, you do not. Do you see enormous mass graves being dug everywhere for the war dead? No, you do not. But in Ukraine, you do see those things, all of them. Do you see millions of people fleeing Russia? No, you do not. Do you see millions of people fleeing Ukraine? Yes, you do. Which society is collapsing? Which society is being bled dry? Which society, as you yourself just reported, Brian, is being forced to conscript all its women, not just its young women, but up to the age of 60? How desperate do you have to be to do that? My mum and aunties were on the I forget the exact term, but it was basically a mobilization index of people who might be needed for war work in World War II. And they weren't, in the event they weren't called up, and forcible conscription was never actually applied where my family was in the north of Ireland, because it was felt to be a sensitive issue. Though, of course, as it turned out, more Irish Catholic Republicans than Irish Protestant loyalists volunteered to fight with the British. That was partly because you ate better in the British Army than you did in Northern Irish society if you were Catholic and working class in those days. There was that too. You know, in Ireland, everything is complicated, nothing is simple, which is actually a good preparation for the wider world. But we look at Ukraine, we see a collapsing society. What you see is very significant and helpful too, because it's not a sign of a healthy society. It's a sign of a resilient society of admirable people who are trying to cheer everyone up and keep life going in the middle of all the horror that's going on around them. That, I would say, is the significance of the booming band scene in Ukraine. And long may it last. It means there is still life. But in Russia, these signs may yet turn up. But we don't see them yet. The Russians are still very comfortably within their comfortable zone of operations, and we have bled Ukraine dry of its people.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I want to ask you about this statement. I'm going to read it, and then we'll take a brief headline. We'll come back, and I'll take your comments on it. But sure. I love what you wrote right here in this part of your article. This obsession with throwing an entire generation of a nation's precious youth into the killing fields of modern war never, ever went away. Not a single one of the host of worthless, dignified, pompous, empty ignoramuses who fill the think tanks and television studios of Washington as the rotting maggots they are, ever once referred to the Iran-Iraq War of 1980 to 1988. This is the Brian McLean Show here on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
This news just in, TNT Radio News.
Ready? Go.
This is James O'Neill with a check of today's headlines. Downtown Manhattan was heavily patrolled by police and swarmed by the media Monday morning as Donald Trump prepared to appear before a judge in his $250 million civil fraud trial. UK Foreign Secretary James Cleverly said he has written to foreign diplomats in the UK about immigrants using small boats to cross the English Channel. It comes as 537 people arrived on Saturday aboard 9 boats, bringing the yearly total to 24,830.
The common housefly, caught in the clutches of the spider's web. Every move it makes just makes matters worse. Then, dinner time.
Feast on the captivating stories, videos, and helpful information on our website.
Whoa.
Dinner's ready.
Oh, man.
Escape is futile.
Just one more video.
Get stuck in our web.
TNTradio.live.
Now, Martin, you were the Washington Times military analyst covering the last 3 years of that war. Talk to me a little bit about this, and why do we just never, are we not learning the lessons, or are we just so corrupt that, the narrative overtakes any humanity when it comes to war?
You really don't need me on, bless you, as a guest, Brian, because you make it so easy. Yes, you've supplied the answer yourself, and you know this. You watch this more carefully than I do. We are that corrupt. But also, even back then, our media were that lazy and they were that stupid. And I What made me an outsider was I hadn't come through Columbia School of Journalism. I hadn't come through Harvard or Yale. I was Irish, and I'd grown up in a civil war and revolution in Ireland. I'm glad it didn't go further because my family were able to live to tell the tale. But if you're Protestant, Catholic, or Buddhist, or Muslim, or Jewish, or anything who happened to be passing through Ireland, it was not fun to be going through that. It led to 30 years of sectarian war, which the combined efforts of the British and Irish governments, both of whom operating more or less responsibly, though the British were involved in the most darkest of dirty tricks that I didn't even dream of. They were going on under my own eyes and those of my friends and colleagues, and we didn't dream about it. But when you come from that background, it's a different background, and you have a different perspective on the world. And when I came to Washington, the only story was always the endless will they, won't they? They're always on the brink of peace. Will Arafat and the Israelis make permanent peace with each other? Now, that they were at least taking breaks from killing each other off, people should have been thankful enough for. And I once heard an aide to Henry Kissinger say that Kissinger's view on that whole thing was not a sinister one, but more a European-weary one, which is there are problems like the Israel-Arab conflict, which are quite simply unsolvable because the claims of both sides cannot be resolved and they will not compromise on them or cannot compromise on them. So the best you can do is try and stop the killing and play for time, and eventually new generations come along to whom it's like Civil War reenactors. We still have Civil War reenactors, enactments across America every year, and I don't think a single person gets killed in any of them, right? Which is a good way to remember both your heritage without making it turn toxic again. And that's what was the case between the Israelis and the Palestinians. That was apparently Kissinger's point about this. But everybody in Washington, that's all they cared about. Nobody paid any attention to Mexico or developing problems on the border, or our history of abuse of the people of Mexico and the governments of Mexico. Nobody paid any attention to the enormous drug traffic in the United States, and that was doing to weaken border security too, all the rest of it. Nobody was paying any attention to the real problems threatening the real people of the United States of America. They just wanted to go down in the history books as policy ones who'd solve the Israel-Palestinian problem. Like Jimmy Carter, they wanted the Bible to have a nice little codex edition. Eternal peace was brought not by Jesus Christ, but by Jimmy Carter. Footnotes too, and by Dennis Ross, right? That's all they were after. They did not give a shit, any of them, about the real interests of national security or suffering or interests or prosperity of the people of the United States of America, as they were supposed to do. And the elected politicians were so stupid and complacent, they thought, oh, these are geniuses, the great brains. We must go along with them. We must listen to them. Zbigniew Brzezinski only ever wanted to destroy Russia, and I knew him personally. And I was his favorite correspondent in Washington, and he said so repeatedly back in the 1980s and early 90s, because I was the very first correspondent of any major American newspaper to report consistently that the Soviet Union was collapsing. And Zbig loved this. And I was a fierce anti-communist all my life, still am, have not changed on that one iota. Monstrous system, killed even more people than the Nazis did. Monstrous system. Nothing good to say about it whatsoever. And all the Russian people today will agree with me on that. I can quote all my old American anti-communist jokes, and every Russian I have ever met will buy me another vodka or two and celebrate, you know, and slap me on the back because they feel the same way, because they suffered under that system. They suffered under that system. But when you came to Iraq, Iran, nobody cared. Now, Brzezinski was, was in government still when we set our policy, and Reagan followed it too, because it was seen in the national interest to stop the Iranian Revolution, which was viciously anti-American, no question about that. So we backed Saddam Hussein. We backed Saddam Hussein for 8 years as a good guy, as a good guy. But he was a bungling idiot. I don't believe we put him up to invading Kuwait. Stupidity is more important in human history than any other force. And Saddam was a brutal, thuggish guy. He had great generals winning, who won the Iran-Iraq war for him. I discussed them in my book, The Politically Incorrect Guide to the Middle East. Nobody else bothers paying any attention to them because they were only Iraqis, only Arabs. But I respected the Arab peoples and I respected the Iraqi people. But what happened to those generals? Their own boss shot them. If he hadn't shot them, he might have put up a better job fighting for his life against two United States invasions, both of which we took over his country technically very easily. But the evil old bastard killed his own best generals, right? He muddled himself too much on Stalin, right? And that was, we didn't put him up to it. That was Saddam's own stupidity. But I looked at that war and nobody else was paying any attention to that war. And what I took from that war, I didn't even dream would apply 40 years later or 35 years later in Ukraine today, although, of course, it does. And I looked and I thought, my God, I read about this in the history books. A whole generation of my parents' generation and their grandparents' generation were killed on the battlefields of the Somme, in 1916, doing just this, marching forward. You know, without any armor, with nothing to stop the bullets, with nothing to stop the machine guns, with nothing to stop the artillery fire, against the one of the best equipped, trained armies in the world, the German army in World War One, and 500,000 British boys died. Proportionately, the number of Irish and Northern Irish boys who died was even greater. It had a traumatic effect on Irish history. Yeah. Apart from anything else, all of the guys who would have fought for the British against the Irish Republic paid the price for their stupidity. The British government they were loyal to sent them to their deaths on the Somme. And that's what happened in Ukraine. And I saw it happening in the Iran-Iraq war, Brian.
Yeah, yeah. And you were there also. You've seen Soviet Russia as it was in decline.
Yeah.
It's just amazing, Martin. Martin, we're pretty much out of time here. I want to thank you for, I've learned so much from you. I always learn so much from you when you're on and just really appreciate you. Finish us up with any final thought.
You said, Brian, I covered the collapse of the Soviet Union, and I did. And eventually it literally collapsed of old age. They had at least three, Brezhnev, Chernenko, Andropov, three leaders who were either in their 80s and senile or already dying men when they became leader of the Soviet Union. All their leaders were in their 80s. It grew to be an international joke, right? Today, the joke's on us. We have Joe Biden, an 81-year-old president who wasn't there even when he was 30, and now he's in his 80s, right? The only hope for young, fresh blood we have is Donald Trump at 77 or 78. He's the youngest, most dynamic figure left in that leadership. We have Mitch McConnell, who is brilliant when he's there, but you never know when he's going to tune out and not be there. We're told Dianne Feinstein has died. Well, duh. How can they tell? How can they tell? I think she died 2 or 3 years ago and they just equipped her with servo motors and wheeled her out to say, vote aye, This is the joke we're in. Hillary Clinton used body doubles to come on and off stage because to hide the fact that she had to be wheeled on and off stage during her dynamic 2016 election campaign. They're all like this. 40 years ago, the joke was on the Soviet Union. One last point. President Reagan was once asked, why don't you negotiate with the Soviets? Eventually he did, of course, with Gorbachev. But this was earlier. And he said, I can't. I want to. But whenever I find some, they put up a new leader, they keep dying on me. And that's the problem we have here. There's no there in Washington. Our leadership are dying of old age the way the Soviets did.
Well said, Martin. Well said. Thank you so much for everything you do. Newcontinent.org. That's continent with a K. Martin Seif, thanks for joining me here on the Brian McLean Show at today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
with his expert analysis and opinion. This is TNT Radio's Timothy Shea.
Why does the United States Department of Agriculture hate small farms? Ostensibly created to improve the safety and quality of agricultural products that make it to America's tables, USDA has completely failed in its mission to ensure the safety of food coming from large-scale processors such as Purdue, Hormel, and Lakeside Refrigerated, and seems to spend an inordinate amount of time concerned about Amish farmers and local farmers selling their beef, pork, chicken, and eggs at local farm stands. Enter Thomas Massey, Republican representative from Kentucky's 4th Congressional District, with a piece of legislation I can really support. The Processing Revival and Intrastate Meat Exemption Act, or PRIME Act, would exempt from USDA regulation agricultural products that are grown and sold within the boundaries of a state. Certain to be lobbied against hard by the large multinationals, it will be interesting to see how farm state legislators take care of farmers in their own states. From MAGAInstitute.com, this is Timothy Shea for TNT Radio.
Challenging the consensus and debunking the narrative. This is Viewpoint.
The 9/11 terrorist attacks led to the so-called War on Terror. But there's another side to 9/11 which, unlike the mainstream media, TNT Radio won't censor. Consider Building 7, the third World Trade Center building, which collapsed later that same fateful day. Professor of Civil Engineering, Dr. J. Leroy Hulsey, led a research team which demonstrated that the official US government version of the Building 7 collapse is a scientific fraud that defies the laws of physics. This leaves us with some very troubling questions about the entire 9/11 attacks. Dr. Hulsey's team issued a final report in March of 2020. It concluded, "The collapse of WTC 7 was a global failure involving the near-simultaneous failure of all the columns in the building and not a progressive collapse involving the sequential failure of columns throughout the building."
Deconstructing psyops, propaganda, and mainstream media BS. You're with Hesher on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Newsweek contributing editor Peter Roth writes about U.S. politics in all its forms, and he is a former columnist for U.S. News and World Report and senior political writer for United Press International, frequent guest across the media. I'm sure you've seen him before. In addition to Newsweek, he writes regularly for the Daily Caller. And is also a regular guest on Ben Stein's podcast, The World According to Ben Stein. Now, Peter, it's wonderful to be here with you. What do you think about the surge in violence that we're seeing in the nation right now, as and maybe juxtapose that with the anti-gun politicians just running completely wild after the Supreme Court's just smacked them down over and over?
Well, it's always good to be with you, Brian, and thank you for that generous introduction. I think the rise in violent crime, violent property crime, let's call it, the looting and the shoplifting that we're seeing has two causes. One is the horrendous state of the economy under Bidenomics, in which inflation is up and real wages are down. So that's driving people to desperation, plus the fact that they had so many generous COVID era benefits given to them during the lockdown that have been finally taken away, created an additional financial crunch, plus the election of all of these Commonwealth attorneys and district attorneys and prosecutors all across the country who don't want to enforce the law, don't want to bring criminals to justice, are refusing to prosecute thefts under $1,000, are standing by as 13 and 14-year-old boys and girls are recruited by adults to go into stores and steal valuable things, knowing that the worst they face if they get caught is a couple of months in juvie. So I think it's all part of a piece. It's coming together, and it's destroying America's commercial centers.
Yeah, it's really sad. You know, I'm seeing this all over the place now. It seems like it kind of started on the West Coast and maybe the East Coast a little bit, but now it's just like every day I'm looking through the feeds and it's like Oh my gosh. You know, all these different places dealing with the same thing.
But it's not everywhere. It's in the places where the liberals have historically been in charge of the criminal justice system and the political process. And you're seeing it all come together now in this decision not to punish crimes. And remember, these people who are supposedly tired and hungry and desperate aren't ransacking the Safeway or the Piggly Wiggly looking to food. They're taking giant screen TVs at a Best Buy, and they're ransacking the Louis Vuitton store and the Max Mara store, and they're stealing luxury goods, which they're probably then reselling on eBay or on one of the other home sale sites, Poshmark.
But AOC told me they just want to feed their families and they're going to be doctors and lawyers someday.
Well, I suppose maybe they're taking the money they're getting from selling the 72-inch widescreen, remote control, 4K streaming television and using it to buy, you know, porterhouse steaks at Costco. But, that's what's happening. And they're not prosecuting this. So what's happening? The rest of us law-abiding citizens are getting inconvenienced. How? Well, shorter store hours. Stores are being closed. Commercial districts are being shuttered in Chicago and San Francisco. Items that are easily transportable are being put under lock and key so that when we go shopping, if we want to get a box of washing machine pods or a case of razor blades or antihistamine, we have to wait for a store clerk to get it for us. And we're paying higher prices because the stores are having to pay higher insurance premiums. So we're suffering, you know, the hardworking taxpayers of America are suffering in lots of different ways here. This isn't just about out of control crime in the city. Target is closing stores. CVS is closing stores. Walgreens is closing stores. We are losing convenience. We are losing access to consumer goods. And everyone says, oh, well, you can go to the internet. Except that under Jokenomics, Lena Khan, the head of the Federal Trade Commission, is going after online sites like Amazon, alleging that they restrict consumer choice.
Yeah. Can you imagine? Can you imagine that? It's just like that's another person that's like been riding that train since college or something like that, just calling out these ideological things. It's like. It's just completely madness. And what about
never had like most of the top decision makers in the Biden administration's economic policy, domestic policy arena, never had a real job like you and me.
Right.
Never had a job out in the private sector that wasn't somehow about manipulating government relationships. Never washed dishes, never scrubbed floors, never a bank teller, never waited tables, you know, never sold real estate, never did any of the things that any of the rest of us do to make ends meet. They just manipulated the public policy arena. And some of them got very rich doing it, and more power to them, except that they got rich at my expense and your expense and the expense of the people who are listening to the show.
Yeah, 100%. And I mean, you're going to go after Amazon, like, okay, maybe there's a there, but I have a hard time believing it's to do anything with protecting small businesses, protecting consumers, keeping manufacturing or trying to keep some sort of manufacturing and entrepreneurial nature in the country. That's not what it's about.
That's right. The Amazon suit is particularly pernicious in the way that they are alleging that Amazon is restricting consumer choice. I have access to more goods at Amazon when I log on to the site than I do at my local warehouse club or my local supermarket or my local drugstore or my local bookstore. Amazon has opened up consumer choice. It's a consumer bonanza. But the government is claiming it restricts consumer choice and that Amazon prioritizes the placement of its products on the Amazon site, as opposed to name brands that that you and I both know, but because they don't buy commercial time on TNT radio, we're not going to mention their names. Is an effort at central planning and government management of the economy and the retail sector, and they're not going to stop until they control healthcare and energy and retail, and they start making decisions for us, then they'll be happy.
I think you just
will be miserable.
Yeah, I think you just kind of hit on where I'm headed with this whole thing. It's kind of like, first of all, what you said about, you know, the talking point, Amazon restricting consumer choice. You know, I have a lot of gripes with Amazon. I'm not a fan of Jeff Bezos. I'm not a fan of the WAPO. I mean, we could go on and on talking about the pitfalls, the negatives and all that. But when it comes right down to it, as a platform, yes, I mean, you may be, you know, when you buy your next GoPro from them or something, you may be supporting globalism with a certain percentage of your money or contributing to the delinquency of Jeff Bezos. Those are all fine arguments I'm willing to hear. But when it talks up, when you're talking about entrepreneurialism, that's one of the nice things about Amazon. Anyone can start a business and use Amazon as the platform. And as a consumer, you can look for American businesses. You can look for American companies that sell through the platform. It's not like Google or YouTube. I can't go to YouTube and say what I say here at TNT Radio for some reason. I get strikes, you know. But it seems like this is all these sort of things are about federalizing everything into sort of like a new school technocratic fashion.
One rule, one size fits all. Top-down regulation, and that's exactly the antithesis of what the people who created America wanted to see. They wanted to see the different states behaving almost like different countries connected in a giant free trade zone that shared the mutual burden of national defense. Now, we are a much more complicated country now, and it can't all be broken down that way. But the spirit of that needs to survive, and it does. You know, we're seeing, for example, there are about six or seven states now that are in a race to see which can be the first to abolish their state income tax. Oklahoma is going to have a special session. Governor Stitt is going to call a special session to look into how they can put Oklahoma on the glide path to zero income tax. I think they're going to, the income tax in North Carolina is down from 7% to, I think it's 2.49% in the latest budget. Mississippi's talking about it. And people are voting with their feet. They're moving from high tax states like California and New York to low tax states like Tennessee and Texas and Florida. You know, there's an appeal there. And the liberals want to pretend it's just about the weather. It's not about the weather. It's about the quality of life. And the quality of life, the average Floridian, the average Texan, the average Tennessean is superior to the quality of life of the average Californian or the average New Yorker. They live longer, they save more of their take-home pay for personal use, their taxes are lower, their stress levels are lower, their job opportunities are higher, and the quality of their educational systems are dramatically improved. And another thing that you're seeing right now across the country are states enacting universal school choice programs, where the state money that would go to a school district is now going to be made available to the parents of the student. So it doesn't go to the building, it goes to the person. And if the parents want to use some of that money to underwrite additional educational expenses like tutors, they can use it. If they want to use it to send their kids to a private or a parochial school, they can do that. And the unions are screaming, but I only see net positive here all around. Competition will make the public schools perform better. And we keep hearing from the teachers' unions that class sizes have to get smaller, that they can't teach so many kids. Well, if you've got all these kids leaving the public schools to go to private schools, the ones who leave will see their scores go up and they'll get better education because the teacher-student ratio will get smaller. So it seems to be a win-win all around, but the unions are fighting it tooth and nail. So I'm very optimistic generally about what's going on across the country. We've got problems that need to be addressed, like the crime problem we talked about at the top of the interview. But generally speaking, outside of Washington, the states are making changes that matter. And the last time that I can remember this happening was in the late 1970s. When Washington was at a standstill, Jimmy Carter was president, we were an embarrassment around the world, the terrorists held our embassy in Iran, inflation and interest rates were through the roof, and Ronald Reagan was running around the country explaining why he wanted to be president, because what America needed was less government and lower taxes, not more. And I see the same bubble merging out. Different issues, but in different states. There's a groundswell building out there. And I'll tell you, if it were 10 states trying to start a state income tax, or 10 states trying to kill public schools, kill private schools and put everybody in public schools, it'd be national news, because it'd be a big move towards central control. But because it's about diffusion of power, you gotta listen to stories on TNT radio and
see there you go.
About what's really Absolutely. Going on out there.
Yeah, absolutely. Peter Roth, thank you so much, sir. Everybody check out Peter Roth on The World According to Ben Stein, and stay tuned for Misty Winston right here on TNT Radio.